Welcome back. I'm Paula Gordon. This is Bill Russell, Dr. Frederick Foray. I say with a big laugh, the excluded middle, one of the things that has been very useful to me in thinking about philosophy is how stuck we are in the West on this, not to mix metaphors, a bipolar perspective, a black and white, an either-or.
Binary.
Binary rather than bipolar, but I think bipolar says it's crazy and that works for me. But the notion that it is either or, I think in many ways limits us in ways that are tremendously destructive and doesn't open out the universe for us in ways that you do to say that it's not either or, it's yes and let's find a creative forward, not progressive necessarily, but a place to which we can go in what Stuart Kaufman calls the adjacent possible.
Yes.
We can create places
like
to go. Whether you're talking science or any of a number of things, as you talk about evidence and logic, yes, and what you neither of you specifically said that I think is important thinking about the human animal is the yes, and there is the emotional.
There's
the rest of the experience that we have to be considering, particularly in a time when the religionist perspectives, all-inclusive, are eager and sometimes demanding that we close down options rather than open them up. So adding the emotional element, the humanness of it all, of course all of it is human, but that's a very important third place to add to the discussion.
Without that, there'd be no impetus. I mean, neither evidence nor logic by itself does anything. It pushes anywhere, whereas emotion does. It gives the oomph to things. The thing I was frowning about, if I was frowning, was the idea of the ratchet, which Bill was against also.
Indeed.
Yes, I was. Thank you for noticing.
but the notion that we could achieve something and then not worry about falling back is the real bête noire, I suppose, in this kind of progressive thinking.
It's also the progressivist fallacy.
It's the progressivist fallacy, right. So now, you're talking about both and. The great philosopher of both and is Hegel, of course, because he wanted to say the thesis and the antithesis and the synthesis so that you get beyond the either or to something more. And then that already develops an alternative which then has to be fought over and then you get to something still more.
That's so tremendously important in thinking about what to do next, isn't it? And it also broke Hegel, if I remember correctly, Professor, helped us break out of the church model. The Catholic Church had pretty much dominated Western thinking for the better part of 2,000 years. But when you get a Hegel, who I think, in at least in America, got confused with Marxism, and it's just not true. Mm. It's a way of thinking that got employed by some forms of thought. Mm-hmm. But the Hegelian notion is a very, to me at least, positive way, and it can be used negatively, but it's a positive way that fits into what I understand to be your constructive postmodern perspective.
Yes, and that perspective really takes emotion. In fact, I try to focus on aesthetics as the dominant. It's not just emotional. It's emotional, it's feeling. But somehow that word emotion has a kind of in contemporary usage, it sounds like it's that which is to be sloughed off. Or
well, you said squishy earlier.
Squishy,
I kind of like squishy.
Right.
Well, it's pejorative. Real men think real hard thoughts.
Yeah, right.
And it's dismissive.
Whereas maybe feeling is one is a word that, you know, once again with feeling, has a kind of a greater muscularity to it.
And the muscularity, when you talk about callogenesis, to me, that is an extraordinarily muscular, wouldn't have been my choice of words, but I'll go with it.
If
the guys want to do muscular, everybody has, without muscles. there is real force, as in a force of nature. And since you put it in the context of nature, short course introduction to callogenesis makes real good sense to me in this context. And I say context.
Hey, context. Radical contextualist.
Now there are two.
Now there are two.
Maybe three.
That's right. And does anybody need to have it explained what kalogenesis means? It means the...
Yes, doctor.
Kalos being in Greek beauty and genesis being the making or beginnings or creativity of.
And what does
making,
that mean?
Making beauty. And for me, making beauty is what we do all the time when we synthesize experience, when we come into a situation and take different parts of the situation and bind them together in a meaningful whole. That whole has some value, and the value ultimately is the value of beauty. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is equally beautiful, and some things can be downright ugly, especially when there is mud thrown on something that's beautiful, or it's torn up, or something like that.
And you don't mean that just specifically in the painting on the wall that somebody attacked. This is a big idea you
that's
have
right.
here.
Yeah.
I don't want to get away from... I don't want to go to the mud... Paula objected to the muscle-bound...
Not bound.
But that,
muscular.
But the muscular, it seems to me, is central to this because it is an act of creation. It mm-hmm. is, you know, both psychically and sometimes physically... Metaphysically, mm-hmm. the full, ultimately or potentially, the full range of human capacity mm-hmm. is brought to bear on this this creation that you're talking about. And in that sense, I mean, it is a matter not so much of raw strength, but of physical and mental activity. Mm-hmm. It's
activity,
a verb.
That's a verb.
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, that's
well,
a good
and
word.
I only noted it because language is so important.
It is.
And muscular, I think, tends to be taken in a sexist way.
Macho.
Yeah. And that's not what you were saying,
that's
but just to be
saying,
clear,
right.
that the action part is very central.
The very word action, I mean, it suggests that we're looking for agents, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, agents who are capable of activity. And that already means that we're talking about units of the universe that are of value. Of create value, are intrinsically valuable. And of course, my own silly metaphysics goes all the way down to ground zero on what's valuable.
It's not silly.
Well, I agree with Whitehead, who's often thought to be silly because he believes that the most elementary element of the universe is something that has agency, that is analogous in a vague way to feelings, to experience, and that experience is that which ties together, unites, and in its moment of activity has value, and then passes that value achieved on to the next moment of activity.
I'm surprised when you say silly.
It's just so dismissive. It's dismissive.
But why?
Because people who dismiss Whitehead are themselves silly, I would say.
Fine.
Let's have an intelligent conversation. You're silly. I'm silly.
I don't mean to just be name-calling, but the fact is that Whitehead is not taken seriously by many. Many philosophers these days don't take Whitehead seriously. And I think that's a lack in our contemporary philosophic culture. Now, that's not to say everyone... isn't taking Whitehead seriously. There are societies for process mm-hmm. philosophy and so on and so forth. And I believe that as we turn the page from modernism to something postmodern, that Whitehead will continue to be looked to for resources.
That's a big change that's happened.
It's a huge. It's unbelievable how great it is, yeah.
This goes to, I think, something you were saying early on, which is the tendency of modern philosophy to be analytical. And we talked about a logic. And it seems like one of the things, and Whitehead would be an obvious example of it, since he co-invented modern logic.
Yeah.
Presumably he had the tool set
yep.
to apply it rigorously as far as it would take him, and yet he ended up someplace else.
Yeah.
And it seems that there are, and part of this goes to the limits of reason.
Yeah.
Or certainly the limits of logic and perhaps even of reason.
He called it speculative. And that is the very limit. But he said without speculation, you come to a point where you don't go anywhere and you need something to break it up. You need something to challenge. And that's speculation. Speculation is always coming around the bend and kicking you in the rear end.
And there's real energy and power in that, because mm-hmm. what that says to me, and this is, never read Whitehead. Okay.
Okay, you're with the majority
absolutely,
of the universe.
Absolutely. And if I read him, I forgot. These big ideas are such that what I'm hearing said is when you come to an end point, you have to have something that will break out of that. Mm-hmm. And part of what I'm hearing you say is the modern is that that which we take as given, it's the soup that's so mm-hmm. familiar. Mm-hmm. We are at one of those end points, and that breaking through is the very work of philosophy. It is the work of people yeah. like you to do the speculating, to say, well, it could be this and it could be yes. that, and what if we tried that?
Yes.
And you are more than simply an observer of other philosophers. You are part of the making of that new kind of philosophy. That's big stuff.
Criticizing and maybe dissolving those stories that we were talking about before.
Which are so destructive in the modern.
Terribly destructive.
You look at the 20th century, which is modern.
Yeah.
How many millions of people killed over the course of that 100 years?
And think about the pollution we have created and the way in which nature is striking back these days, which is no doubt.
Calogenesis is not a destination resort. It is an ongoing process, a challenge.
Nice way of putting it. Nice way of putting it. That's right. It's very much other than a vacation resort.
We'll come back and check out that not vacation resort in just a moment with Frederick Frabe with us when we return.
Neatly put.